Good morning and welcome to our podcast. My name is David Pritchard and I'm the head of marketing here at Cintons. Joined today by my colleagues Sophie Towns and Jonathan Tutu, who are solicitors in the corporate team here at Cintons. And our podcast today, which will last approximately 20 to 25 minutes, is the first in our Understanding Corporate Law podcast series. And today, Sophie and Jonathan are going to give a summary of key differences between asset and share sales. So, without any further ado, Sophie is up first. Sophie, good morning, and over to you.
Thanks, David. As David mentioned, my name is Sophie Towns, and I am a solicitor in the corporate team at Cintons. I'm joined today by my colleague Jonathan Tutu, and we will be discussing the differences between share sales and asset sales. So, why is it important? Understanding the difference between a share and asset sale is of paramount importance in the context of a business acquisition or disposal. Quite simply, you need to understand what it is that you are buying or selling. From a commercial point of view, and generally speaking, both structures are capable of achieving the same outcomes. However, there are great differences between the two from not only a legal perspective, but also a tax perspective. It is therefore important to have an understanding of the structures at the very outset of any transaction so that you can determine which structure is best suited to you and your commercial needs. So we will get into the differences now. I'm going to take on the role of explaining the differences from a share sale perspective, and Jonathan will be explaining the differences from an asset sale perspective. So a share sale, what is it? A share sale often involves the sale of the entire share capital of the target company by the existing shareholders to the buyer. As the buyer is buying the entire target company, it is a warts and all purchase, meaning that the buyer is purchasing everything within the company and, generally speaking, assuming the responsibilities of all liabilities in the company. Like any transaction, there is always room for negotiation, so there may be scope to request the seller to bring an end or extract prior to completion any arrangements or assets that do not sit favorably with the buyer. For a share sale, the target must be a company limited by shares. A useful example to differentiate between the two is to think about a box of matches. For an asset sale, you can choose which matches, the assets you wish to acquire, whereas with a share sale, you would acquire the whole box, including all of the matches. So I'll pass over to Jonathan now from an asset sale perspective.
Hello, I'm Jonathan, and I will be discussing the comprising part of an asset sale today. In an asset sale, as Sophie mentioned, you can pick the particular asset and the business which you want to take on. The benefit of this is there are certain assets that can be cherry-picked, and some can be left behind with the seller, which can be beneficial to both the seller and the buyer, depending on the negotiation between the two. It brings about this option to negotiate, so there is always the option for one party to try and exclude something. It will not necessarily be accepted, and you might have a debate over this, but in the end, both parties will come to some form of agreement in which the assets they want or they want to retain are with them after completion. For an asset sale, the target can be a company limited by shares, it can be a sole trader or a partnership, and sole traders and partnerships cannot be sold by means of share sale as they have no shares in them. And it is also the method when a company is in administration or receivership or in liquidation, and the assets are to be sold this way. Moving on, we are going to discuss some of the documentation that is required for each asset and purchase sale. There are a few differences, although there will be one main agreement which is pertinent to both. Sophie, I will pass on to you.
Thanks, Jonathan. So the key document for a share sale is a share purchase agreement. Share purchase agreements can often be lengthy and complex as they are based upon the specific business of the target company and can include differing provisions as to how the consideration is to be paid by the buyer to the seller. For example, deferred consideration or earnouts. The added complexity links to the fact that the buyer is acquiring the entire share capital of the target company and therefore inheriting any risk that may attach to the target company. This is particularly true if the target company was incorporated and has been trading for a considerable time, The buyer will take on any current and historical liability of the target company. The share purchase agreement will require approval and signatures from the buyer and all selling shareholders of the company. Like any contract, the parties must agree the terms of the share purchase agreement, and this can sometimes add complexity to the transaction if there are numerous shareholders or any dissenting shareholders. Now, I'll pass back to Jonathan.
The key document in an asset sale is going to be an asset purchase agreement. It is of utmost importance that this includes a very clear list of the assets which are to be transferred to the buyer, and also includes any which are to be excluded and are to be retained by the seller. A list of employees will also need to be included within this, as the employees will not automatically stay with the business and they will need to be transferred over to the buyer. In terms of approvals on an asset purchase agreement, this will require the approval and signatures from the selling entity, which is most often a company, sole trader, or partnership, as I have previously discussed. It will most likely not require approval or any signatures from all shareholders or any shareholders in that matter, if the company is limited by shares, although there may be some provisions in the company's governance documents which require a certain level of shareholder approval to enter into such documents. This is normally dealt with outside of the asset purchase agreement, and therefore signatures are not required. And it is normally the signatures of a director, partners of a partnership, or a sole trader of the business which are required in the asset purchase agreement. Moving on, we will speak about the actual things which are going to be transferred in both share sales and asset sales, and I will pass on to Sophie to discuss those in the context of a share sale.
So in the context of a share sale, the shares in the target company shall transfer to the buyer at completion by virtue of a stock transfer form, and the buyer will become the owner of the target company. It is the target company which is the owner of all its assets, has the benefit of any contracts, and the responsibility of any company liabilities. One thing that the buyer must be mindful of is a change of control provisions in the target company's contracts. Sometimes there are change of control provisions in contracts which give suppliers or the other contracting party the option to terminate the arrangement upon a change in control of the target company. And this is normally defined as a change in majority shareholding of the company. This may mean that a lucrative contract of the target company could be terminated as a result of the share sale, and this is something that should be reviewed in detail at the due diligence stage of a share sale transaction. Now I'll pass on to Jonathan to discuss transfers from an asset sale point of view.
Thanks, Sophie. In terms of an asset sale, as I've said, it is key that these particular assets that are to be transferred are all listed within the agreement. The most common assets to be transferred for an asset sale are the business info and records of a business, the goodwill of a business, the IT and the IT systems of a business, the intellectual property of a business, the plant, equipment and machinery that the business currently operates, the premises or the property which the business operates from, any kind of stock which is normally valued at very close to or on completion, the benefit of the contracts of the business, with the burden most often not passing along with these, and any other assets that are material to the business or wanted by the buyer. As previously noted, these can, subject to negotiation, be cherry-picked by the buyer, and upon agreement between the buyer and the seller, certain assets can be retained by the seller. This also provides the opportunity for the company to sell a certain division of the business without having to sell all of its operations. This is particularly useful where there is a complex seller which has various arms of business which just wants to get rid of one certain area and continue operating in the others as it has done previously. Moving on, we will discuss the due diligence process, what it is, and give a brief summary of the comparisons between due diligence in share sales and asset sales. In both cases, the buyers will want to conduct some form of due diligence over the business they are buying. This will give them an idea of the workings of the business they are purchasing, any kind of liabilities, costs, and the overall internal workings, which might not be obvious from the initial information received. Due diligence exercises normally comprise of financial exercises, legal exercises, and commercial exercises, for which requests and replies are exchanged either directly between the seller and the buyer, or between their professional representatives. The extent of the due diligence would depend upon the contents of the particular business, how much information the buyer wants to be satisfied enough to purchase the business, and often comes down to the relative price and cost of this for professional advisors. In transaction where the purchase price is relatively low, it may be disproportionate to spend a lot of time incurring fees on review of due diligence. However, where the price of a business is substantial or there are quite tight regulatory matters in respect of that business, it is often advisable to do a targeted due diligence exercise on the particular assets and important contents of the businesses which are required by the buyer. At the very least, I will move on to Sophie, and she will be able to provide a quick summary of the due diligence in respect of a share sale.
Thanks, Jonathan. Due diligence on a share sale is more likely to be comprehensive, given that the buyer will be taking ownership of the target company and in turn the business of the target company and all its assets, rights and liabilities. This will result in a more detailed exercise to determine if there are any problem areas for the buyer to consider in respect of the target company. If any problems or potential problems are identified as a result of the due diligence process, then the buyer will normally seek protection in the form of a warranty or indemnity, which will be specifically provided for within the share purchase agreement. A warranty or indemnity will give the buyer the ability to seek recourse against the seller. And I'll just pass back to Jonathan now for an overview of asset sale due diligence.
For asset sale due diligence, this can instead focus on the assets which are to be acquired. If the buyer has determined they only want to acquire certain assets, it makes sense to focus the due diligence on those and ignore some which may be inconsequential to the buyer moving forward after completion. If a fuller due diligence exercise is preferred by the buyer, it can also help to inform a buyer of particular issues on specific assets, which the buyer can then try to exclude after further investigation. This can be particularly relevant if the buyer already has some similar arrangements or maybe a similar contract in place, and there is already one held by the seller, which they do not want to take on after completion. Moving on, we will briefly discuss the employee considerations when it comes to share sales and asset sales, particularly in respect of employment legislation known as TUPE. Sophie, for you to take on the share sales.
Thanks, Jonathan. So for a share sale, as it is the ownership of the target company, which will change following completion of a share sale, there will be no change to the employees in respect of the identity of their employer. Pre and post completion, it will remain the target company. So from an employment legislation point of view, this means there will be no transfer of employment rights or TUPE to deal with, and the buyer does not need to inform and consult with the employees of the target company. This results in a more straightforward and streamlined process in respect of employees. Now I'll pass back to Jonathan to discuss employees from an asset sale point of view.
On an asset sale, the employment of the employees of the business will transfer from the seller to the buyer. Therefore, it is important that there is a full list of all employees at the date of completion that are to transfer. TUPE, the employment legislation, applies to asset purchases and protects employees' rights upon such a transfer or a completion. TUPE includes a necessity to inform and consult current employees about the proposed transfer, therefore giving them full transparency about what is about to occur and the transfer of their employment to the buyer. TUPE also confers that dismissals that a buyer wants to make on the purchase purely to cut costs and that are not for genuine redundancy reasons are likely to be deemed unfair. This gives the employees an avenue of claim. So if their employment is brought to an end without reasonably justifiable reasons, simply because the purchaser wants to get rid of them to cut costs, they can bring a claim. Moving on, we will speak about some tax implications of both asset and share purchases. However, we will not go into particular detail on those as any advice should be undertaken by a particular tax professional. Sophie, to pass on to you when it comes to tax.
Thanks, Jonathan. So just to emphasize what Jonathan has said there, we are not tax advisors and we will not go into detail on this section. And you should definitely seek specific tax and accountant advice if you are considering to make an asset or share sale or purchase. We will briefly mention a few points of consideration. The differing tax consequences of the two sale structures will usually be a fundamental driver in determining which route is taken. So from a share sale point of view, broadly, the consideration paid by the buyer to the seller is paid directly to the seller, who will be liable to tax on the proceeds of sale. If the seller is an individual, they may be eligible for entrepreneur's relief, which allows the seller to apply a reduced rate of 10% capital gains tax on the profits of the sale. Depending upon the level of consideration paid by the buyer to the seller, stamp duty may be payable on the transfer of the shares, and the stock transfer form will need to be stamped by HMRC's stamping office. The relevant threshold for stamp duty is £1,000. If the consideration is more than that, the buyer will be liable to pay duty at a rate of 0.5% of the consideration on each share transfer. Now I'll pass back to Jonathan to discuss tax on asset sales.
In general, the tax calculations are quite complicated when it comes to an asset sale. Therefore, a tax advisor should always be engaged. On asset purchases and sales, the selling entity is to be taxed on the consideration paid by the buyer, as they will be receiving these funds. For shareholders to get the money from any asset sale directly, proceeds will have to be extracted, which is most usually done in the form of dividends. This does bring about a certain dividend tax for any shareholders, which is based upon the general income tax rate and can go from 7.5% at a basic level up to 32.5% at a higher level, and even 38.1% at a level higher than that. There is an initial £2,000 allowance on dividends for small amounts. However, the actual amount should be calculated and should be reviewed by a tax advisor at the time. Moving on from tax, we're going to have a discussion about how warranties work, which are one of the most important parts of both share sales and asset sales. Upon selling a business, a seller will normally provide a set of warranties, which are promises about the current state of the business prior to and at completion and for a certain historic period beforehand. This provides the buyer with some satisfaction of the current state of the company or the entity which is being sold, and also gives them certain amount of recourse for claims to be made in the future if any of these promises are determined to be untrue. These are both common to share and asset deals, and in general cover some of the following things: the capacity of the sellers to sell the company, the share ownership of the company if it is to be a share sale, any group structure of the business, the accounts, tax and financial information of the business, contracts of the business, any licenses or regulatory approvals of the business, which need to be passed on at completion, any current litigation of the business, including any disputes it has with any current or former employees, any title to the assets which the business has, any IT or IT systems of the business, any intellectual property owned by the business, the employees, including the terms of the employment of the employees, any tax matters of the business, and most recent and prevalent, any COVID measures which the business is party to, including any kind of furlough information and grants, and any other wider grants which have been obtained by the company. Passing on to Sophie, she will start discussing the precise negotiation of these warranties.
Thanks, Jonathan. The warranties to be provided by the seller will often depend upon the seller's bargaining position, the negotiation process between the parties, and the value of the sale. The fundamental point in relation to warranties are that they serve to protect the buyer, and the buyer is deemed to have based its decision to enter into the sale contract upon reliance of the warranties. The seller will usually go through a disclosure process so that if any of the warranties can be qualified in any way, the seller will make certain disclosures against them. To the extent that the seller does not disclose against the warranties, if any of these are proved to be untrue and not accurate, the buyer may bring some form of claim against the seller, subject to any limitations included in the sale agreement. Now we will discuss the end result from both a share sale and asset sale point of view. So from a share sale point of view, at the end of the share sale transaction, where the entire issue share capital of the target company has been sold, all of the shareholders will have fully exited the company and a new ownership structure will be in place. There may, of course, be situations where the parties have agreed for a seller to continue as an employee or consultant or similar to assist with the smooth transition of ownership. Buyer will have acquired the target company, Warts and All. And going back to the example at the start, the entire matchbox. I'll pass over to Jonathan in respect of assets.
At the end of an asset sale and on completion, all of the assets, including the sale, will be transferred to the buyer, subject to any third-party approvals required. I think the key point to note in this is that both parties must actively engage with third parties to arrange the transfer or assignment of such arrangements of the seller. These will be subject to any current terms of these arrangements or contracts, and sufficient notice will need to be provided if they are to be transferred. There is also the option, and it is sometimes preferred by suppliers, to set up new arrangements, bringing previous ones to an end. However, particularly for a seller, it should be noted that if there are any fixed term contracts and these are not transferred over to the buyer at completion, these will remain with the seller, and as such, the liabilities will also remain with the seller, and they could end up having to pay for a contract in a business which they are not using. All of the assets which were excluded will be left behind in the business, and if this is preferred by the seller, this business can be continued, subject to any restrictive covenants in place. I must note that restrictive covenants are often included in agreements which restrict the sellers of a business or a company from acting in competition for a certain time period, which is often 2 or 3 years, with the buying entity. This provides some comfort that the seller or any of the sellers will not immediately or within a short period of completion try to poach away the employees or customers of the business which they have just sold. As stated, the exclusion of assets is particularly useful where the business wants to sell a particular arm of itself and keep operating in another sector after the completion of the sale. Finally, we are just going to provide a brief summary of the advantages and disadvantages of both share and asset sales that we have already alluded to. I'll pass on to Sophie to provide a quick summary of the share sale advantages.
Thanks, Jonathan. There are various advantages in respect of a share sale, and I've already talked about many of these, but just to recap, they include various tax benefits, including potential entrepreneur's relief and no double tax charge being made in respect of gains and dividends, potential rollover relief, and having the ability to defer tax on chargeable gains. Business will also benefit from continuity, with all of the arrangements and contents continuing with the buyer unless they are cancelled by way of change of control or other regulatory provisions. But otherwise, a share sale usually provides for a smooth transition of ownership. The disadvantages, again, I've touched upon some of these, and the main one is a share sale is a warts and all sale, and therefore the buyer is acquiring risk with the acquisition of the shares in the target company, and therefore may inherit some liability which is not preferable. The buyer will also have to take on all employees of the company on the current terms of their employment, and although Tutti doesn't apply to a share sale, there could be possibility for some redundancies or an unsettled workforce post-completion. A greater level of due diligence is required to ensure that any possible risks and issues are identified before completion, and therefore there's a heightened importance around the due diligence process as opposed to an asset sale. In addition, you would normally require the consent of all of the shareholders, particularly if it is a sale of the entire issued share capital of the target company. Therefore, if you have any dissenting shareholders, this can prove very problematic. This is particularly true if there are any voting issues or the dissenting shareholder carries a significant right to vote in the company. Now I'll pass back to Jonathan, who will discuss briefly the advantages and disadvantages of asset sales.
As a quick summary, there is greater negotiating power for the buyer and for the seller, in fact, when it comes to asset sales, as there is the ability to exclude certain assets which they don't want to transfer or they don't want to take on. This does remove some risk for the buyer and also removes any unwanted costs subject to negotiation. There is also the option for the seller to simply sell an arm or a section of the business and keep running the material business that it does. This provides an avenue to cash in on a section of the business and raise some funds, which can be spent on the other arms of the business upon the sale of certain assets. there is likely to be no shareholder consent required, subject to any requirement in the Articles of Association and Shareholders Agreement of the business, and it is likely that board approval will probably be the only thing that is required for the sale. The level of due diligence can be a bit more targeted and focused than within a share sale. And in terms of tax and accounting issues, even though it might be a little bit more complex than share sales, there is always the ability of allowable loss if there is any devaluation of capital asset and the option to pick up any particular capital allowances. In terms of disadvantages, the trickiest part of asset sales is always arranging for the formal transfer of the contracts, licenses, arrangements, and any third-party approvals which this requires. This exercise in practice is normally undertaken by clients themselves as they have direct lines to the other contracting parties. However, we can be involved if required. There are occasionally some delays which this can bring about, and in particular, there is some heightened scrutiny in certain fields such as healthcare, veterinary, social care, and other industries which require a buyer to go through various approval procedures with a central board before they can effectively purchase the business. Sometimes requires certain checks on individuals who are coming into the business, and these aren't needed for share purchases, and the contracting entity will stay the same. Although in share purchases, there may need to be notifications of the new owners. There are more complicated tax calculations involved with asset purchases. Therefore, these should be discussed with a tax advisor. There is always the possible risk that a buyer can lose the custom of any client of the business, especially where arrangements would require the buyer to transfer their services over to the buyer instead of these just remaining as constant with the seller. Whereas in the case of a share sale, the entity would remain that company, which is subject to the share sale, and therefore the customers would not have to transfer any particular arrangements over to the new buyer, although there may have to be some kind of note of the new operator. TUPE regulations do provide some issues, particularly if the buyers want to restructure the staff and the business that they are purchasing and try to cut costs by getting rid of some staff. However, quite fairly, this provides employees with sufficient protection so that redundancy exercise cannot be undertaken due to the wants of the buyer to cut costs, and requires them to have some commercial and tangible reason to them, with the employees being able to make claims if they were unfairly dismissed. I hope this has provided a relatively short summary of both share and asset sales. However, we will continue to discuss these in more detail in further podcasts. That's a thank you from me, Jonathan.
And thank you from me, Sophie.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed listening to that. Very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts, and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And you can also follow the corporate team at Sintons on Twitter at SintonsCoCo, at SintonsCoCo. If you'd like to discuss anything our speakers have raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with them or a member of the team at Sintons. They can be contacted via telephone 0191 226 7878 and at their respective emails, sophie.towns@sintons.co.uk and jonathan.tutu@sintons.co.uk. As I mentioned at the outset of this podcast, this is episode one in our Understanding Corporate Law podcast series. We hope you found this useful. We will be bringing you episode two in approximately 2 weeks' time, and we very much look forward to engaging with you then. Stay safe, everyone, and thanks once again for listening.